Greetings, everyone, all across the universe. Laszlo Montgomery here with you once again. And it is my great honor and privilege to bring you another extra special episode, this time featuring none other than Dr. Lee Moore of the world-famous Chinese Literature Podcast, last featured on this China History Podcast show with the other half of the CLP, Dr. Rob Moore, when we discuss the life of Lin Yutang. So, Lee, welcome to the CHP. Glad you could slip me into your busy schedule.
Thanks for having me back, Laszlo.
So let me tell my listeners how this whole thing came about. You and Rob dropped an episode in mid-June. June 18th it was, Paul McCartney's birthday. And you featured a poem by the Song poet Mei Yao Chen called Sacrificing for My Cat, Ji Mao. And in all the conversations we've had since I had the pleasure to first meet you and Rob, I never knew you were a fellow Ilorophile. And as I wiped away the tears from listening to Mei Yao Chen's sad poem written to memorialize his beloved Mr. Five White, I contacted you and said, oh, we gotta open up that treasure box of Chinese history and literature and sift through all those gems and find some material for a cat episode. Cats in Chinese history and literature. So we started talking about it a couple months ago. Then you disappeared for a while to the other side of the country. And now you're back and looking better than ever. Boy, that PhD really did wonders for you. I bet Rob can't push you around anymore. So, my fellow Ilorophile, let's talk about our two favorite subjects, cats and Chinese culture. And before we go any further, let me also send out my personal greetings to any other cat fanciers from all over the world who were tempted by all those hashtags and social media posts about this episode and tuned in to the China History Podcast for the first time. There's more than cats here if you want to check out some history from China's distant and recent past. Ditto for the Chinese Literature Podcast. Yeah, no one can accuse us, Lee, of not staying true to our show titles.
That's right. You know, cats are amazing. They fulfill one of the basic human needs, the need to be looked down upon. And so that's what we're here today to celebrate, right, Laszlo?
Yeah, they put us in our place. You could say that. So let's get down on it. There was a whole lot of excitement in China in 1997, I think it was, when a discovery was made of these eight cat bones unearthed from a Yangshao culture burial site in Shanxi from more than 5,000 years ago. And that's even older than Fuxi. Buried in this Neolithic gravesite alongside this person were bones from two different cats. And it was dated to roughly 5560 to 5280 BP before the present time.
Laszlo, I think I should mention something about Yangshao culture real quick.
Yeah, please do.
So in early Chinese archaeology, you have three major cultures. Yangshao culture is the most important. That's on the Wei River in the middle of the Yellow River Valley. You have Dalinko, which is in the lower Yellow River Valley. And you have Xinglonghua, Hongsheng, which is in northeast China. Yangshao culture is the big one. This is the one that's in the area of southern Shanxi, southeastern Shanxi, and northwestern Henan. So I think most listeners will know that this is what's going to become the core of Chinese civilization. Yangshao pottery appears well before we get anything like historically recorded dynasties. But if you could call something this old, quote unquote, Chinese, and I'm using air quotes here, this would be Chinese culture. This would be kind of the origins of Chinese culture. So to find cat bones in a Yangshao burial is huge.
So the big debate was, what were these two kitties doing in this gravesite from Yangshao culture times, located about a 3.5-hour drive north from Xi'an?
You know, we don't actually know what they were doing. We don't even know if these cats were domesticated. Based off what we will talk about later, we don't think cats were domesticated in China until probably after the Han Dynasty, maybe as late as the Tang Dynasty. And these cats may not have actually been the same species of cat that we have today, that is the species Phyllis Catus. That one's hard to remember, right, Laszlo?
Yeah.
So there are questions today about where actually in the world cats were domesticated. And even some scientists even question whether cats are today domesticated. I know what you're thinking. Of course they're domesticated. I have one living in my house.
Two.
There you go. Domestication actually has a technical definition, and that usually involves some sort of change in the physical appearance of the animal. So with dogs, they actually look more infantile when they go from wolves to dogs because, you know, humans breed them to make them look like they're puppies. Like that's just something that they do. There's not been a sort of physical change in cats. Cats, Felis catus, is pretty much the same physically as pre-domestication. So there's this question, are cats even domesticated?
But who gets the credit for being the first ones to domesticate cats and enjoy the pleasures of cohabitating with them?
It seems most likely that Egyptians were the first to domesticate cats, if we accept that cats are even domesticated. Some could argue that Egyptian civilization would not be possible without the domestication of the cats.
Why is that? Did they need someone to slow them down constantly with their cat antics?
No. Egyptian civilization is the result of all of these things stored up in storehouses. You have lots of wheat and barley and other food. The civilization develops because you have these excesses. Not everybody has to be farming every day of the week. So civilization really only happens when you have lots of extra food. And what do you need to have lots of extra food? You have to have cats. Cats keep the rats at bay.
I see. So they worshipped cats, or cats were venerated. There was a goddess. Who was that? That was Bast or Bastet? You know anything about her? She was the...
Yeah, she's being worshipped. So she's a cat goddess, and she's being worshipped even before cats are domesticated. So it seemed like Egyptians have cottoned on to cats well before they actually had them living in their homes. Maybe there were some cats running around in Egypt that were not living in people's houses, but still were keeping the rats at bay. I don't think we know that much about the goddess, though.
I know she was half feline, half female, worshipped as early as 2890 BC, so she went way back. And she protected the hearth and home, protector of women's secrets, and also the goddess of cats. And that she was born from Ra and Isis.
Good parents.
Yeah.
The things that I've read have suggested that 1950 BC, that's not the 1950s that you know, Laszlo, but the 1950s were around the time that cats were domesticated in Egypt. But it kind of sounds like there might be some evidence. I mean, if this cat goddess is the goddess of hearth and home, it sounds like cats were living in people's homes.
Yeah, I mean, you see them in all kinds of Egyptians' paintings and carvings. So they were around. They were definitely interacting with humans.
It's interesting that we have cats associated with femininity this early in the history of cats interacting with humans, because that's something that's true in China and, of course, in Europe as well. In China, cats are very much this force of yin. And I'm using yin as in yin yang, the all too often overused things that you can find in hippie stores. Of course, that is, you know, a real legit thing. The dark force is called yin, and it's feminine. Cats are associated with that yin force throughout Chinese literature and Chinese history.
Yeah, Bast, she had a cat's head and a woman's body. You know, later on, I read the Egyptians regulated the possession of cats, and that people who came to Egypt couldn't take them out. You couldn't export them. And they fiercely protected their cats and didn't want them leaving the country. And I read that in 450 BC, killing a cat in Egypt, it got you the death penalty.
Ooh. I mean, you've got to protect your natural resources, right, Laszlo?
That's right. That's as it should be.
And Egyptians had quite a few cat graveyards where you would just have cat upon cat mummified, right?
Yeah, mummified cats. Yeah, I think most people would tell you the Egyptians were the first cat lovers. They're believed to be the first ones to domesticate the African wildcat, though some phylogenetic evidence suggests cats were around even earlier in West Asia, the Near East. So were the Egyptians the first ones to domesticate cats, or was it in Persia or Mesopotamia? It's hard to tell. Too far back, but both regions of the world definitely loved their cats. There was a find in Cyprus even earlier where cats were found buried together with humans.
Yeah, the burial of cats in the graves on Cyprus, it's not really clear what's going on. I mean, going this far back in history, you're just always going, there are always going to be lots of question marks. I don't think that those graves in Cyprus necessarily signaled domestication, maybe, but it does signal that something is happening, that cats are being associated with this power that lasts beyond the grave.
So I'm sure a lot of cat people the world over are wondering why Felis catus was handed such short shrift as far as its exclusion from the 12 Chinese zodiac animals. What did the Jade Emperor have against felines?
It's one of the greatest crimes in China's cat history.
No kidding.
There are several versions of this folktale. One that was taken from a collection of folklore in Henan says that the cat and the mouse were once best friends. The cat would carry the mouse up the tree when other animals came to threaten the two of them, and the mouse would steal food and share it with the cat. But one day, the Jade Emperor in heaven issued an edict saying he wanted to decide which animals would be chosen as the 12 birth year animals for the people that would make up the zodiac in the Chinese calendar. The Jade Emperor tells all the animals to come up to heaven the next day, and he's going to make the decision. The mouse at first is like, yeah, let's do this. But then the mouse comes to realize that the cat is much cuter than him. He thinks that the Jade Emperor will choose the cat over the mouse. And when the time comes and it's time to head up there to the Jade Emperor's palace, the mouse doesn't actually wake up the cat. And we all know that if cats can be said to have one fault, it's oversleeping. So the whole ceremony starts, the mouse goes up there, the cat's still back wherever he is, in his bed, asleep as this whole process is happening. The Jade Emperor selects the 12 animals we know today as the Chinese zodiac. And the way he does that is he actually asks humans, or he kind of tries to get humans' input. And as humans are discussing who to put into the Chinese zodiac, no one's saying anything about the mouse. So the animals are down amongst the humans, and the mouse realizes that he's going to lose. So what does he do? He starts crawling up people's clothes, and then suddenly everybody's shouting the mouse's name, mouse, mouse, mouse. And so the Jade Emperor mistakes that and thinks that people really want the mouse in the zodiac. So that's one explanation of how the cat did not get into the Chinese zodiac and how the mouse did. Of course, when the cat woke up and he found out what was happening, they became enemies forever.
I don't know. Maybe this was before you were born, 1976. There was a song called The Year of the Cat by Al Stewart. That was a top 10 hit. I don't know if you remember that one.
Way before my time.
Not before mine. So anyway, being married to a Vietnamese and all, I get to celebrate the Year of the Cat every 12 years. In the Vietnamese reckoning, the rabbit was left out of the zodiac and the cat was honored instead. And seeing how next year, 2023, is the year of the rabbit, for all cat lovers around the world, we can consider it the year of the cat. It'll be the water cat. So anyone born...
I'll celebrate Tet.
Yeah, for sure. Anyone born in 1951, 1963, 75, 87, 1999 or 2011, everyone born in those years has the cat option freely available to them. And I don't know how that happened. I think it came to some sort of a misunderstanding, something that got lost in translation for the word mao in Vietnamese. I'm not sure of the story, how the cat actually replaced the rabbit in the Vietnamese zodiac culture. But, you know, I read during the Southern Song Yuan Dynasty, there was a literary figure named Dai Biao Yuan, who had an interesting take on what someone had said, who was querying why the cat was left out of the 12 zodiac animals, you know, being so close to humans and all, and certainly more useful to humans than a rat or a snake. So Dai Biao Yuan, he considered what this person said, and he replied that cats were no better or no worse than a rat or a snake. He said, I'm quoting, "A cat loves rich food and a cozy place, lightly shifts its allegiance, is not reliable, lacks righteousness, and also, if it gives birth to too many kittens, it will kill its own offspring. Even snakes and rats don't do that." So, Dai Biao Yuan, he wasn't a cat lover, not a Cat Fanciers Association member, if that esteemed organization was around in the dying years of the Southern Song.
But what's interesting is that the Southern Song, so this particular example accepted, the Southern Song was like the cat fancy era of Chinese history. You have so many poets in the Southern Song and some in the Song, the Northern Song, who are writing about how great cats are. The Southern Song is, of course, 1127 to 1279. The Song Dynasty overall is 960 to 1279. Cats become a big thing in poetry during the Song Dynasty. I think we're going to talk about that later, but it's just important to keep in mind that Song Dynasty is the golden age of the cat.
Yeah, well, before we get to the Song, let's talk about cats during the earliest times in China. It's thought that when humans began to settle down and began engaging in agriculture, wild cats slowly insinuated themselves into their lives, and some form of a symbiotic relationship began to develop. So what about cats in China from the Han? And then let's talk about when they started showing up in China.
So we don't really know when cats were domesticated, but it seems like it's probably in the Han or the Tang Dynasty. We definitely have evidence for cats being domesticated by the Tang Dynasty. Now, this is just me spitballing here, but I think it could have been Buddhists who brought domesticated cats into China. We know that cats are, for a lot of Chinese writers, closely connected with the protection of books, that is, once they become domesticated. And we know that one of the ways Buddhism influenced China was by bringing all these sutras and other literary works into China. Buddhism in China is a very literary phenomenon. It's a very literary religion.
And the rats ate the books.
Rats ate the books.
And they wanted the cats to protect the rats from gnawing on those books.
Exactly. And we know that Buddhism, originally centered in India, definitely had a connection with cats while there. The earliest known domesticated cats in India are from the Harappan culture, which lasts from 33 BCE to 1300 BCE. I don't think we actually know when cats were first domesticated there, but at the very least, cats are domesticated in India 2 millennia before they're domesticated in China. So it makes sense, right? That with all of this, these ideas and texts going from India to China, that they would bring cats. I don't know, it makes sense to me. One thing to point out, Laszlo, is we know the word mao, that's modern Mandarin for what we call cats. That word, that hanzi, is used in the Shijing.
The Book of Odes.
Thank you. Yeah, it's translated about 1.5 million different ways. It's got Book of Odes, the classic of poetry, the Book of Songs. I can't even keep track of all the different ways that work is translated into English. But this is the earliest work of Chinese literature that we still have today. It's a book of semi-religious poems and songs composed and compiled probably sometime in the 7th century or earlier. If you want to point to a place where Chinese literature begins, it begins in the Book of Odes. And the Book of Odes actually has the word Mao in it, but we don't think it refers to the Felis catus, that species of domesticated cat that we have today. It actually probably refers to other small wild cats. Why do we think that? Well, for one reason, we have poems in the Book of Odes where if the cat were domesticated, we would expect the cat to appear in these poems. One of the most famous poems in the Book of Odes is just called Fat Rat, and it's a poem that talks about rats nibbling away at the grain of the peasants. Laszlo, is it okay if I just read the poem?
As long as it's not as lengthy as the Epic of Gilgamesh, go ahead.
Okay, here we go. Fat rat, don't eat my millet. I have served you for so long, but you have not taken care of me. I swear I'm going to leave you. I'm going to take off for that other happy land. Happy land, happy land. That is where I'm going to be. Fat rat, don't eat my wheat. I have served you for so long, but you ain't done me any favors. I swear I'm going to leave you. I'm going to take off for that other happy country. Happy country, happy country. That is where I'll find my reward. Fat rat, don't eat my seedlings. I have served you for so long, but you have not given me anything in return. I swear I'm going to leave you. I'm going to take off for that happy suburb. Happy suburb, happy suburb. Oh man, sigh. So this poem is about rats. You would expect cats would make an appearance in this poem if they had been domesticated, but they don't. So we feel pretty confident that cats at this point are not domesticated in China. We also know the Book of Rites and other texts use words that are also related to cats, the Li Ji. So there are these kinds of cat-like creatures running around early Chinese literature, but we don't know that much about them, and we think that they're probably not domesticated.
Oh, also, I wanted to mention that in China, at least, it's believed the whole matter of human cohabitation with cats began with the leopard cat, rather than the African or Near Eastern species of wild cat, Felis silvestris libica, I believe. But this whole matter is still up for debate, like so much from the history of China's Bronze Age. So before we look at cats in the Tang Dynasty, 618 to 907, let's talk about Emperor Wen of Sui and his cat story. This is the famous Empress Dugu tale. She was the wife of Emperor Wen. So her name was Dugu Qieluo. She was an ethnic Xianbei Mongol. She was also the mother of the second and last emperor of the Sui, Yang Di. There's a couple versions of this tale, but Emperor Wen, he got it in his head that his brother-in-law, Dugu Tuo, brother to the empress, that he was involved with one of the palace servant girls who was worshiping cat spirits, you know, that were not only capable of killing people, but could also seize all their wealth and assets. And someone brought this rumor to Emperor Wen's attention about this palace servant girl, and he immediately had his brother-in-law, Dugu Tuo, investigated. And when it was found that he had a hand in what was going on, Emperor Wen of Sui ordered his execution. But his wife, Empress Dugu, intervened on behalf of her brother, and the Sui emperor agreed to spare his life, though he did reduce his rank to commoner status. And henceforth, in the Sui, the whole idea of calling on cat spirits to do their mischief against humans was outlawed and punishable by death. So let's move on to the Tang. You got anything?
You know, the Tang is known as the glory years of the sort of Chinese culture, Chinese literature, but it's not really that glorious for cats in China. Cats are definitely domesticated, but they're not as big as they're going to be in the Song Dynasty. We have a couple of stories about cats in the Tang that are interesting, but we'll have to wait for a couple of hundred years to get to the really good ones. One of the stories that I think is most interesting is Wu Zetian. She's a much reviled empress in the middle of the Tang Dynasty. Lots of people don't realize this, but she actually founded her own dynasty from the Zhou. That's a different Zhou from the pre-Qin Zhou. Lasted from 690 to 705 when it collapsed just before her death. She's really hated by a lot of Chinese historians, though some people really love her. And, you know, I think there's still quite a bit of debate about whether she was good or bad. I'm very skeptical of the claims that she should be hated.
You're not a Confucianist?
I'm not a Confucianist, yeah. So go figure. you know, still, because she is, well, I mean, because she's a woman, let's just put it out there, she's often considered illegitimate. So a lot of Chinese historians, they just pretend that her Zhou dynasty did not exist. They just say it's part of the Tang, and they kind of roll her together with everything else. But the cat story is interesting. Before she founded her Zhou dynasty, as she was rising through the imperial ranks, so the story goes, she actually tortured two of her rivals to get to be Emperor Gaozong's favorite consort. She visited both of them in prison. One of them was submissive, and one of them was defiant.
That was Consort Xiao, right?
That was Consort Xiao, yes. So Consort Xiao, when Wu Zetian visited her in prison, Consort Xiao said that in her next life, she wanted to be a cat, and she wanted to have Wu Zetian incarnate as a mouse so that she could torture Wu Zetian. What was Wu Zetian's response? Supposedly, she expelled all the cats from the palace. It's hard to know if this is the reason her dynasty collapsed so quickly and lasted only 15 years, but hey, it couldn't have helped. More happily, Han Yu, who's one of the great Confucian scholars of the Tang, really the beginning of the Neo-Confucian revival that's going to blossom in the Song, starts with Han Yu. Han Yu actually wrote an essay where he noted how benevolent his patron's cat was. This cat had adopted kittens from another mother and nursed them alongside her own kittens. This was Han Yu's way of buttering up his patron. He was saying that, you know, his patron's virtue must have been so great that it inspired his own cat's virtue.
Okay. You know, Wu Zetian, she gets a bad rap, but once she clawed her way to the top and wiped off all the blood, she wasn't such a bad empress. There's another Wu Zetian story that contradicts the Consort Xiao story. This other Wu Zetian story comes from the Zizhi Tongjian that contradicts this notion that she forbade cats in the palace. It states that after Empress Wu became Empress Regnant, well, she wanted to prove that everything was so harmonious under her rule that even natural enemies like a cat and a bird would not fight. So she had a cat and a parrot brought up together in the same cage and kept them very well fed. And of course, the cat, being well fed, had no inclination to eat the parrot. So Wu Zetian considered this experiment a great success. So to show off and prove to everybody that hers was such a harmonious society, she brought the cage with the cat and parrot into the court and passed it around to all her ministers. But in the process of traveling to court and being, you know, passed around, the cat hadn't eaten and became very hungry and immediately made a lunge for the parrot and killed it. So who knows? What else we got from the Tang? Anything?
Not really much. That's all for the Tang.
All right. So let's move right into the Song Dynasty when our favorite animal hits the big time in China. Felis catus already conquered Egypt and the Near East. And now, after so many years since that Neolithic gravesite in Shanxi and serving the Lao Bai Xing so faithfully as a vermin exterminator, feline mania lands in China. There was a huge cat craze, especially for the long-haired Persian cats. So without any shadow of a doubt, from the poems, the literature, the paintings, it's clear by the Song, cats have become pets and members of the family living side by side inside the homes and palaces of these cat fanciers from the 10th to the 13th centuries. So it was Mei Yao Chen's poem from your past episode that sort of provided the spark for this collaboration effort. So let's look at a few cat poems and explore Felis Catus in the Song.
Is it okay if I start out with that particular poem, Meiyao Chun's Offering a Sacrifice to My Cat?
Oh, yeah, let's read it again. Let me go get a tissue.
Yeah, please, I'll give you a second. Offering a Sacrifice to My Cat. Since I got my cat, Mr. Five White, mice have not attacked my books. This morning, Mr. Five White died. I offered a sacrifice of fish and rice. I buried him in the river. I do it to pray for you, not to distance myself from you. Back in the day, you nibbled on a rat. Gnawing on it, you would meow and circle the yard. You wanted to frighten the other mice and to clear them out of my little house. When I was on a boat, we would stay together in a room. Although my rations were thin, at least I didn't have to deal with mice urinating in and eating my food. The fact is, you worked hard, harder than chickens and pigs. Lots of folks value animals that can pull a plow or drive a cart. They say that cats aren't as good as a horse or a mule. WTF, I don't want to talk about this anymore. Mr. Five White, I will cry for you. You okay, Laszlo?
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm okay. Just thinking about him. So let's hear some more Song poems. You got any, you got another one?
Yeah, before I do, I wanted to give a shout out actually to the subreddit r classical Chinese. Laszlo, I think I mentioned this to you when we were kind of kicking around ideas for this episode, and I was doing some of the translations. I put my some of my translations up on the subreddit classical Chinese and got some very helpful, if at times withering, criticism, exactly what I needed. It's just a great place for those of y'all who are interested in classical Chinese. Either you want to learn it or you already are a master of classical Chinese and you want to share your knowledge with other people. Highly recommend checking it out. We can put it in the show notes.
Are you going to put all these poems in the show notes at the Chinese Literature Podcast?
Yeah. So I'll post it on a webpage specifically dedicated to this podcast. I'll have all the poems and I'll make sure to mention the subreddit on that page.
Very good. Very good. So let's hear some more Song poems. If they're short, let's hear it in Chinese and English.
Sure. How about this one? It's Lin Bu's poem called Kitty or Mauer. Xian gou shi de xiao xi yu, bao wo hua yin xin you yu, zi shi shu xian ping bu dao, mo can shi su zai wu lu. I'll read the English. I catch a little fish out of the stream on my thin hook, and my cat, full, lies beneath the shade of flowers, happy as one can be. Because of him, the rats all hate me, and poverty never comes to my house. I am not ashamed in my little hut to hold an office without doing any work. This is a poem. It's by a guy named Lin Bu. That last line there alludes to a practice of kind of having a sinecure, that is holding an office, but not actually doing any work. What Lin Bu is saying here is that he's able to essentially lean on the cat's work of taking care of all the rats, and he doesn't have to deal with rats and the way that they would impoverish him.
Mm. Do you got anything from Lu Yo? I got a couple here.
Yeah, Lu Yo is the most allophilic poet in Chinese history. He's a Southern Song poet. He's not only a cat lover, which already makes him great, but he's also a patriot. He wanted to push those northern barbarians way back to where they came from. He had a softer side.
Hey, my Manchu and Jurchen listeners might take offense to that.
he did have a softer side. Laszlo, would you mind reading that poem by Lu Yo?
Yeah, sure. He was just the greatest of the cat-loving poets. I featured Lu Yo recently on the Chinese Sayings podcast. Mm-hmm. He was the guy who gave us the great Cheng Yu, only the prefect can light fires, but the common people can't even light a lamp. So that came from Lu Yo.
That was him.
Yeah.
Huh.
So let me read a couple. Maybe this is his most famous one. Given as a present to Mr. Pinknose. Zeng Fen Bi, Lian Xi Li Nu Zhe Shu Pin Nu Ran Xun Xue Hu Can Chun Wen Qu He Shi Zhu Men Li Zhi Bao Yu Sun Shui Jin Yin. Sunset after sunset, my cat tears apart mice frequently. Angry, his whiskers sprayed with blood. Protect the leftovers of what I have stored up. How could he compare himself to the rich cats in the houses, where they fill up on fish all day and sleep on brocade cushions? And one more from Lu Yo. This is called Zeng Mao, A Poem for My Cat, number 3. Zhi shu wu gong yuan bu he, yi dan yu fan yi shi lai. Kan jun zhong ri chang an wo, he shi fen fen qu you hui. I do not reprimand you for not catching mice. I still serve you fish on time, and every day I see you sleeping without worry. So for what reason do you keep running here and there?
I should point out that all the poems we're declaiming today are my translations, except that one. That one is actually the work of Xiran J. Zhao. Zhao is a New York Times bestselling Chinese-Canadian author of some interesting Chinese culture-inspired science fiction. And if I can say so myself, she's an excellent translator. One day, she actually had a string of classical Chinese cat poems that she was translating and just put them up on Twitter, so we wanted to give her a shout-out. There's just so many poems we could read by Lu Yo. Laszlo, is it okay if I read out one last Lu Yo poem?
Oh, sure, go ahead. I could, if you have 100 more, that's fine, too.
So this one is just called Writing a Poem for Fun on Getting a Cat from a Nearby Village and Naming Him Snowy. I'll read the Chinese first.
四乎能源木如珠不服缘但知空许水武艺未于参薄荷时时醉取书夜夜温浅生
So my English translation of that is, he climbs a tree like a tiger, like a foal. He does not bear the burden of a carriage. Only he knows the empty rat holes, and he has no intention of eating fish. He often gets drunk on catnip. Night by night, he keeps warm on the carpet. In a past life, he must have been my page boy, accompanying me from that old mountain village. I think we could continue on with those 100 Lu Yo cat poems that you were talking about, but maybe we should give someone else a chance. Lu Yo is not the only songwriter to do cat poetry.
But he definitely was an Ilurophile, so, I mean, we should show him some respect.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I got one here from the literatus extraordinaire, one of the great calligraphers of the Song, Huang Ting Jian. This one's called Requesting a Cat, Qi Mao. Ye Lai Shu Bei, Qi Mao Si, Kui Wong Fan Pan, Jiao Ye Mian, Wen Dao Li Nu, Jiang Shu Zi, Ma Yu Chuan Liu, Pin Xian Chan. Night comes and these rats take advantage of my cat's death. They eye my jars and turn over my plates, messing with my sleep. I heard that your kitty had a couple kittens. I have some fish strung through a willow branch, and I would like to hire one of your cats.
You know, what's cool about this poem is that, so Huang Ting Jin is just essentially doing a Craigslist ad for a cat. I mean, it's in the form of a poem, and Huang Ting Jin is a great poet. But it's just a classified ad. And we actually know that Huang Ting Jian got the cat that he was looking for because he sent another poem that was a thank you note. He gets the cat from a guy named Zhou Wenzhe, and he sends Zhou Wenzhe a poem. Thank you, Zhou Wenzhe, for sending me a kitty. Is it okay if I read that?
Mm-hmm.
Yang de li nu li zhan gong zhang jun. Liu Yu Jia Feng Yi Dan Wei Yan Yu Chen Bao Si Bi Dang Ling Shu Shui Kong.
Your cat has demonstrated he has battle skills. He is clearly carrying on the family tradition of the great general Zhou Yafu. With a thin meal of one scoop of fish, he is not satiated. He commands all the rat holes in all four of my walls. So, Laszlo, the poem you read by Huang Tingjian, it's just called Qi Mao. That's like requesting a cat, something like that. There's actually a whole group of poems with this title, and Huang Tingjian's not the only one who's doing it. You have a bunch of different poets recycling the same title to write different poems on the same thing. They all want cats.
I see, Qi Mao. How about this one? I got one more.
Go for it.
From the song. This one is from Hu Zhonggong, and it's called Shui Mao, the Sleeping Cat. Ping Zhong Dou Su Shu Qie Jin Chuang Shang Li Nu Shui Bu Zhi Wu Nai Jia Ren Yo Ai Hu Ma Yu He Fan Yang Ru Er. There are grains in the bottles and cups. The rats steal them all. The cat's asleep on the bed and knows nothing about it. His helpless family still cherishes him. They buy him fish and rice and raise him like a son.
I think we could keep going on and on, but we have to stop at some point with all of this cat poetry from the Southern Song. The listener needs to go and do other things, even if their time would be better spent listening to more Chinese cat poetry. Is it okay, Laszlo, if I read just one more poem from the Southern Song?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
So this is by Yao Mian. He's a Southern Song poet. He dies right before the Mongols clobber the Southern Song and end the Han Chinese dynasties for almost 100 years.
97, to be exact.
His poem is called Teasing the Cat. Here's the Chinese. Ban hu pi mao xie xin xiu yin jiao shui shi qin ren liang jian zong shu hun de ci men wai rang ji tai bu ren. The English for that, my translation of that is just mottled tiger-like skin of my cat is clean and new. They sleep pampered on the brocade cushion, like a loved family member. The mouse crosses between the roof beams. His strategy is muddled, but outside he goes to steal a chicken. This is too heartless. Should we call the Southern Song cat poetry there? I mean,
how about Song Dynasty paintings? That was also another, cats figured prominently in Song paintings as a rebus. You know, it was Andrew Singer. He taught me what a rebus was when he was introducing the artwork on snuff bottles, you know, images and homonyms to reflect blessings and deeper meanings. It's called a rebus. I didn't know that.
So Mao is actually a homophone with an honorific word for an octogenarian. That is someone who's 80 years old. Die is a homophone for septuagenarian. So that's someone who's 70 years old. So with Mao and Die, meaning cat and butterfly, you actually had lots of paintings with cats playing with butterflies, and these were great parents for old men. You would give them as a present to old men. There are also actually paintings of cats with mice in their teeth. These are called silkworm cats. They were actually hung outside of where silkworms would be spinning their cocoons. The idea was that they scared the mice away. I don't actually know how well it worked, but I guess if a scarecrow works in a field in Iowa, then a painting of a cat will probably work in a silk growing area.
There's another one with in a painting that contained a cat, a butterfly, and the flower, a peony, Fu Gui Mao Die, which means may you achieve longevity as well as wealth and honor. So anyway, you have all these cat paintings with all these other elements that serve as a rebus to bestow blessings on the person you're given the gift to. Oh, and also I read in these paintings that calico cats in particular were popular rebuses in paintings because they were, for whatever reason, I don't know why, they were a symbol of wealth.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. Oh, one more. You know, there was the first funerary commemoration of a cat immortalized in Chinese literature was from Wu Qiuyan. He lived during the Song Yuan transition. He lived from 1272 to 1311. So he had a funerary commemoration for his cat, and he, you know, that he claimed to love as a human being. So the work doesn't survive, but it was mentioned in later writings.
Wow.
So, by the way, while cats were put on a pedestal in Song China, over in Europe around the same time, cats, especially black cats, were reviled and symbols of evil. You know, they were symbols of the supernatural and were associated with witchcraft and evil spells. And that's where we got, like, don't let a black cat cross your path. Yeah, over in Europe.
No wonder it was called the Dark Ages.
Yeah, that must have been the reason.
You know, Laszlo, that was mostly true throughout Europe, but there were a couple of places where things were not so benighted. In Scotland, cats were actually treated as a stroke of good luck and a sign that prosperity was on its way. And it was also considered good luck to have a black cat on a ship at the time. I assume part of the reason was because cats would catch mice, but also I think it was just as kind of a sort of folkloric thing.
Mm. So if we don't got anything from the Yuan dynasty...
Well, actually, there is one thing from the Yuan dynasty. It's not much, but we do have a little tiny, it's not cat poetry, but there is a book called the Na Mao Jing, essentially the Yuan dynasty equivalent to Dummy's Guide to Getting and Caring for a Cat. It's literally the classic of getting a cat. That's what the title translates as. And in poking around online, I actually wasn't even able to figure out if this classic of getting a cat still exists. But, you know, no one expects that much from the Yuan dynasty, right?
Not me. Well, at least we could see, starting in the Tang and definitely in the Song and Yuan, cats in China have become the friends of all humans. And their importance to the household is now beyond just killing vermin. So let's go straight into the Ming Dynasty. This was a time when the palace cats had their own quarters in the Gugong, you know, with attendants to care for them. What do you have for the Ming Dynasty? Any good poems or stories?
So I've got a good poem. So this poem is called Cat in a Painting, and it's by Zhang Yining. The Chinese is just Xiu Yin Shui Qi Bao Xi Xian. Ban wo xian ting, ri jing qian, yi zai mu dan hua xia jian, shuang jing yi xian, wu qing tian. My translation of that is sleeping on the brocade cushion, full of river fish. Half lying in a quiet courtyard, the silent sun ahead. He recalls seeing it beneath the peony flowers, two eyes looking in a straight line at noon across the lovely weather.
What is it with these brocade cushions? Now I'm going to have to run out this afternoon and get one for my cat.
I think they sell them on Amazon for cats, actually. In all seriousness, I think the brocade was kind of the sign of wealth. It was like the top thing that you could buy for a human or a pet. So we're seeing all these brocade cushions just because it's not only a great thing for a cat to sleep on, but it signals how much you actually care about your cat, that you're willing to drop some big money on where your cat sits.
I'm going to have to go out and get a couple today. Hey, I got a Ming Dynasty poem by Wenwei Ming. Are you interested?
Absolutely.
This is another one of the Qi Mao requesting a cat genre of poems. So let me read it to you. Zhen zhong cong jun qi xiao li, nü lang xian yi ban qu shu, zi yuan ye ta si gao zhen, duan yao shan zhai hu jiu shu, qian pin zi jiang yan guo ruo, zi xun mo dao shi wu yu, Hua Yin Man Di Chun Kan Xi Zheng Shi Can Mian Er Yue Yu. I treasure the little cat that you gave me. My girl already laid out the carpet. Because of the cat, I could lie on my couch at night free from worry, especially in terms of that cat guarding the old books in my mountain studio. I hired him with a present of salt wrapped in bamboo leaves. On my record of meritorious service, let it not be said that I fed no fish. The flower's shadows cover the ground. The spring games are about to begin. It is now time for the silkworm to hibernate for more than 2 months.
So again, I think this poem is kind of gesturing towards that idea that paintings of cats were hung outside silkworm cultivation areas to scare away the mice. You know, it's hard to know exactly what's going on here, but I think that's part of it right there.
Yeah. You know, let me also mention, when he wasn't engaging in all his Taoist hobbies and seeking immortality, the Ming Jiaqing Emperor, he was a major Ilorophile, a real cat-loving emperor. And his kitty's name was Shuangmei. It was a Persian cat, according to my sources. So during the long period when he didn't attend court affairs, it said he just sat around all day and played with Shuangmei. And when Shuangmei passed away, the Jiaqing Emperor was so distraught. He had all his ministers write memorials for the cat, and he had it interred in a special gold or gilt coffin under a cypress tree in Jingshan Park. And the grave vanished, but the cypress tree is supposedly still there. And speaking of coffins, well, you know, this isn't related to the Jiaqing Emperor, but there was an old saying that if a cat jumped over a coffin, the deceased would rise and live again. And there's a variation of this that goes, if a cat jumped over a corpse, the person's soul would enter the cat and live on. And if it jumped over a girl's coffin, she'd become a vampire unless the cat was captured and killed. So many of these stories that tie in cats with supernatural powers over life and death. So we're in the Ming Dynasty. Anything else cat-wise coming from literature worth a mention?
There is a story by a philosopher named Liu Ji. Can I read it out?
Yeah, go for it. Let's hear it.
So according to Liu Ji, there was a person from Zhao who was suffering from mice, and he requested a cat from Zhongshan. The cat that the person from Zhongshan gave him was good at hunting mice and hunting chickens. More than a month later, all of his mice were gone. Oh, and also all of his chickens were gone. His son was worried about it, and he asked his father, "Why not get rid of the cat?" His dad said, "You're thinking about it wrong. If we are suffering from mice, we don't care if we don't have chickens. Think about it. If we've got rats, they steal our food. They destroy our clothes. They punch holes in our walls. They destroy our tools, and with this, we will freeze and starve. Let's not be troubled by not having chickens. With no chickens, we won't be able to eat chicken. And that's it. Starving and freezing, that is way worse. What would we do without a cat?" I've kind of been dancing around it, Laszlo. Should I discuss Jingping Mei?
Yeah, why not? But do be careful. This is a family program. Nothing too sexual or lascivious, please.
I'll see what I can do. Jingping Mei is translated as the plum in the golden face, and it has the Ming Dynasty's most famous cat. But Laszlo, you're right to be concerned, because if you want to maintain your Apple Podcast clean podcast status, we have to be very careful how we discuss the plum in the golden face. This is a novel from the Ming Dynasty that is, I'm just going to say it, it's pornographic. The novel is about a guy named Xi Menqing and his six less than merry wives. For the most part, the novel cycles between family drama in the house and graphic sex scenes, either of Xi Menqing and his wives, or Xi Menqing and local prostitutes, or his wives cheating on him. There's all kinds of stuff. But essentially, it's a family drama. You know, Laszlo, there's a phrase in Chinese, "三个女人一台戏." It's essentially translates as three women, one drama. It's this misogynistic notion that whenever you have three women gathered together, you're always going to have some drama. That's kind of what this novel is feeding off of. It's a lot of the plot revolves around the women fighting each other. And that's where this most famous cat from the Ming comes in. In chapter 59, the bad wife of the novel, Pan Jinglian, gets a cat. She teaches her cat to kill the infant of the good wife. Part of the way she does this is by starving the cat, and she has the cat practice on other things. The cat actually kills the infant. This is Xi Minqing's son. Now, sons are a big deal, in Chinese culture. So when Xi Minqing finds out, it's not a good ending for the cat. I'm not going to say what Xi Minqing actually does to the cat, because this is supposed to be a cat lover's podcast. But needless to say, the cat comes to a swift and brutal end.
You didn't mention that Pan Jinglian, how one of the ways she trained her cat was that over a period of time, she would only feed it nothing but raw meat, you know, to give it that wild disposition and make it more hungry for uncooked flesh, you know, something other than cat food.
Yeah, it's really cruel the way that everything that happens to this cat.
So let's move on to the Qing, 1644 to 1912. Surely this love affair between the Chinese and their cats only kept getting better. Any good cat poems or literature or memorable coffee table books from the Qing?
Yeah, we actually have a coffee table book, an album from the Emperor Qianlong with his 10 cats. And there's some really stunning art of all 10 cats, and we have all their names. Some of them look to be long-haired Persian cats, but some of them, based just on looking through the album, look like your standard short-haired cat. But it's clear Qianlong, the longest-serving emperor. Is that right, Laszlo? He's the longest...
With an asterisk,
right. The longest-serving emperor in Chinese history was definitely a cat lover.
And a narcissist, may we say.
No comment.
I heard he wrote a lot of poems.
Yes, a lot of bad poetry.
Yeah, that's a terrible reputation to be a prolific writer of bad poetry. So during the Qing, there's several mentions of this legendary Sun Shu cat, or Chinese lop-eared cat. This was a long-haired, floppy-eared cat that's either extinct or never existed. Many travelers to China during the Qing remarked on seeing these cats, these Sun Shu, S-U-M-X-U. It's another one of these, you know, something got lost in the transliteration that came from the Portuguese rendition of the Chinese Song Shu, or squirrel. So if you Google Sun Shu cats, there's all kinds of drawings and paintings of them. So a Polish Jesuit missionary, I think, was the first one to mention them in 1656. They had these pendulous, floppy ears and a long-haired coat that was their distinguishing characteristic. I don't know, maybe the whole thing is an urban legend. No one ever got one on video. So anything else from the Qing that we could add?
It's not much of a cat poetry period.
Mm. All right, well, let's do ourselves a favor and just stop in 1912. I think by the time of the Qing emperors, cats were pretty much part of everyday life in China, in the cities and in the countryside. So what do you think? Do you think cat history and literature and art was unique, how it developed in China? Or do you think the attachment and love for cats was universal? Was it the same in Europe and elsewhere in Asia?
I think it's pretty much the same. Cats in both places are understood as sort of connected with feminine forces. And they're used in human society for largely the same thing, to hunt vermin, to protect grain, to protect books, those kinds of things. I don't think China's love of cats is all that different from the allurophilia of Europe or other places.
You know, I read something from 2014 that said officials in the Forbidden City keep a couple hundred cats inside the palace complex that roam around freely and just kill all the vermin who also called the place home. And they're referred to as the Royal Cat Family. There was a CGTN article I read that claimed They may have been descended from some royal cat from the Qing dynasty. And I heard they got Instagram accounts and everything, but I can't find any. So, anyway, rich or poor, Chinese throughout history held cats close to their heart. The rich as a pet and the poor as a rat catcher. Do you got any good cat chengyus or any good cat-themed Chinese sayings?
Yeah, I've got a couple. How about amao ago? That's kind of Mr. Cat, Mr. Dog, something like that. If we were to translate it literally, it kind of just means unimportant people. I think the most close equivalent phrase we have is just Harry, Dick, and Tom. And
that's Tom, Dick, and Harry to you, man.
Laszlo, if I remember correctly, that was Lu Xun who came up with that chengyu, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Another chengyu that I think is pretty good is Mao Shu Hong Mian, cats and mice sleeping together. It alludes to officials allowing subordinates to do bad things. It's kind of a catch-all word for collusion. I have one more. Mao ku lao shu, cats crying over a mouse. It's sort of crocodile tears, you know, fake tears. Obviously, the cat doesn't cry over the mouse in any real sense. They just
right
fake tears.
Mao ku lao shu. Yeah, that's right. The cat crying over the dead mouse. Hey, what about Deng Xiaoping? Doesn't matter if the cat is black or white, as long as it catches mice.
You know, it's funny because Deng is incredibly famous for that phrase, but it may not have been Deng's cat at all. There is some evidence that there was an inspection report written on August 4th, 1959, with something about several production teams from Xiong County's Tiantang Commune. In that report, the authors mentioned a multicolored cat, though here it's a yellow cat or a black cat. Is it okay if I just read the line?
Yeah, go ahead.
Some leading cadres passed down the message that, quote, it doesn't matter if a cat is yellow or black as long as it catches mice. So it may have been that Deng's cat was not even his own cat. He was just borrowing the cat 20 years later after having read that report from his home province, which makes sense. Deng was a pretty good guy, so he would obviously adopt a cat, right?
Yeah. Well, he's never going to live that one down, whether he was the first to say it or not. That term, doesn't matter if the cat is white or black, as long as it catches mice, that is forever associated with the great Deng Xiaoping.
I think it's on his tombstone.
He was cremated, and his ashes were spread over the sea. If you had listened to my 8-part Deng Xiaoping series, you would have known that. Was it 7 parts? I can't remember. Anyway, hey, how about the Cat Hall of Fame for fictional cats? Can you name any of the great fictional cats off the top of your head?
I have a 3-year-old, and I have another kid on the way in the oven, so obviously I'm going to have to tip my hat to the cat in the hat, the great Dr. Seuss work. You know, a lot of literature folks are kind of hoity-toity, and they look down on Harry Potter. I think Crookshanks is one of the great cats of all of literature. And of course, you've got Garfield. I grew up reading Garfield comics. Is there anything I'm missing?
Yeah. How about the Cheshire Cat from Alice in Wonderland?
Yeah.
And Hobbes from Calvin and Hobbes. And we haven't even discussed the original Maneki Neko, the most famous aspect of Japanese cat culture, the beckoning cat, the Jiaozaimao. Yeah, Neko is cat in Japanese. You like can't not see them at the entrance to any Chinese or Japanese retail or eating establishment. Either a poster or a battery-operated one with the paw going up and down, beckoning you to enter. What a great icon of wishing one good fortune or good luck. And hey, how about Puss in Boots, Felix the Cat, Sylvester, Tom from Tom and Jerry, and of course, Morris the Cat, world's most finicky cat. And he wasn't a cat, but he was a king, the Mao Wang. What about Elvis Presley?
That's right. In Chinese, Elvis is referred to as the king of cats, Mao Wang. Do you know why that is?
I have no idea.
King makes sense. We all know where the king comes from. But at one point in early in Elvis's career, he was referred to in America as the hillbilly cat. And somehow when Elvis was translated into Chinese, those two things, the king and the hillbilly cat, combined to form the King of Cats.
I never heard that. I always just knew Elvis as the Cat King. Hey, oh, we forgot Catwoman. Don't forget her. And also, another cat legend. You ever seen those Cultural Revolution-themed posters of Chairman Meow?
I have one of those in my office, actually.
I have that on my home screen of my phone. Hey, have you ever had Maoshir Cafe? Coffee luwak?
You know, I am not a coffee drinker. I'm a tea drinker. And so all coffee tastes like cat poop to me. So having actual cat poop coffee does not sound appetizing.
I haven't tried that yet, but I'll try it one day. What the hell? I'll try anything once. So the other night, whilst satisfying my cat video addiction, I found one that listed the most expensive cat breeds. You know, something like only 2% of the world's cats are actually purebred or pedigreed cats. So you want to hear? All these cats fell into this 2% category, all purebred.
Yeah, let's hear it.
All right, so the fifth most expensive cat breed, you know, with papers and certificates and all the stamps and approvals of all the relevant cat associations. So number five, most expensive is the Persian cat. And it runs you about $5,500 a head. And number two is the Alerca hypoallergenic cat. You ever heard of them?
Not really, no.
That was some bioengineered cat that was hypoallergenic and allowed cat lovers who were allergic to cats to have one of them in their house. I don't think it worked. I think there was a big controversy associated with it. But it sounds too good to be true. But $6,000 is what that'll set you back. You know, expensive, but not beyond the spending power of the masses of everyday true cat lovers. So the third most expensive cat is the Bengal cat. $25,000 for that beautiful specimen. They are gorgeous. So the second most expensive cat is the Savannah cat. That's a domestic cat crossed with a African wild cat and a sub-Saharan species known as a serval. I'd love to own one. They're so sleek and wild looking. $50,000 is what it's going to set you back. My wife would divorce me if I dropped $50,000 on a cat. I mean, you know, considering we already have two perfect kitties acquired from the Oakland Animal Shelter that we acquired for almost nothing. 50 G's, man. You could buy a lot of lint rollers with that kind of money. And the champion most expensive cat breed is the Ashera. Very rare. Not many come on the market each year. And such is the demand that these kitties, I kid you not, they go for $100,000 each or higher.
Jeez.
Cat lovers only. If I could remember, I'll put a link to a video of these beauties in the show notes. Having one of these in your house is like, hey, it's like living with a wild animal that's also a pet. So what else can we add to our cat discussion? I think we left out the part about cats as a protein source in many countries. I won't name any names.
Yeah, cats are not kosher or halal, so we know at least it's not the Jews or the Muslims, right?
Yeah, they won't eat cats. They're carnivores. That's not allowed.
You know, the mention of Islam reminds me, Laszlo, do you actually know there is a city that is named Cat? At least it's named cat in the national language. Do you know where that is?
I do not.
I'll give you a hint. The city itself is mostly populated by ethnic Chinese folks, but the country is one of the most important in the Muslim world. And a good source on the early history of the Chinese colonization of that area is CHP episode 278.
Kuching or Sarawak.
Yep.
The island of Borneo. Who can forget the first white Raja, James Brooke?
Exactly. So Kuching is the Malayu word for cat. No one really knows how the town got its name. But there is a story that James Brooke, he was, when he was landing in the area, he asked one of the locals, hey, what's that? And he pointed, and he meant to point at just the land, but a local thought that he was pointing at a nearby cat. And so he said Kuching. And then that's how the city got his name. That's probably not true. It's too cute to be true, but still, it's a good story.
Oh, you convinced me. I just added that place to my list. I mean, I was planning to go to Borneo anyway, to both the East Malaysian part in the north and the Kalimantan part, but I'll stop in Kuching and wallow in some cat culture there.
Don't forget to check out the cat museum.
Oh, okay. Hey, you know, the Prophet Muhammad, he was a big-time cat lover, according to the stories I've read. There's one that says his kitty, named Moaza, it goes that one day the Prophet awoke from his slumber for morning prayers, and as he began to dress, he discovered that Moaza was sleeping on the sleeve of his prayer robe. So rather than wake up his kitty, he used a pair of scissors to cut the sleeve off his robe so as not to disturb his cat's slumber. So the name of the prophet's cat means to care about others or one who comforts. So yeah, cats, yeah, very popular in the Near East and admired for their cleanliness. In fact, so clean are cats considered in Muslim culture, they can even freely walk inside mosques, and they can even drink from the same water container that's used for purification rituals at the mosque.
Not dogs.
Yeah. So, my fellow Ilorophile, my fellow Maonu, I think we've just about come to the end.
Oh, don't forget, we're also Chanshuguan. That is the excrement removal officer.
Oh, yeah, Chanshuguan. Hey, I'm a senior officer, man. I'm a Gaoji Chanshuguan and four-time Golden Scooper Award winner in my weight and age group, that is. So, this went well. I hope all Ilorophiles and non-Ilorophiles alike got a kick out of this one. We covered a lot of cat history and literature, as was the whole point of this episode.
Before we go, should I mention the most powerful cat in today's China?
Oh, wow. Who's that?
Alibaba and his Tianmao. Of course, in English, we say Tmall. Alibaba has a bunch of different platforms where they sell billions and trillions of dollars worth of stuff. Tmall is one of them. The Chinese name for that is Heavenly Cat.
I didn't think about Tianmao. So any Chinese literature podcast or special projects you're working on that you could leak to my CHP community and whatever cat people who also tuned into this episode?
Yeah. So you should check us out on Chinese Literature Podcast. Our website is ChineseLiteraturePodcast.com. I know that's tough to remember. I'm going to put all the translations that I did up onto that website. We should be on your favorite podcasting platform. If not, let us know. Send us an email at ChineseLiteraturePodcast@gmail.com. In terms of special projects, I'm also working on a book. It's essentially trying to get the backstory on all the big news events that you're seeing around China. So anybody who's paid attention to any news has heard about Taiwan, Xinjiang, Hong Kong, the Chinese economy. These are huge stories. And essentially, I'm trying to kind of give the literature and the historical background on those. You have a lot of journalists talking about what is happening today in China, but not enough folks are talking about how these places got to where they are today. The book I'm working on will attempt to do that using Chinese literature and history talk about how these places got to where they are today.
Okay, very good. Any nice cat-related quotes that we can conclude with? You got anything?
I'm from Georgia, and you know, John Lewis was not only one of our congressmen, but he was also a famous civil rights activist. He said something that I think would be a great place to leave it at. Happiness is being at home after a long day, playing with and feeding my cats. I am a happy person.
I think Sigmund Freud would agree to that. He once said, time spent with cats is never wasted. Now you tell me, were truer words ever spoken? One last quote, Mark Twain. He wrote, cats are smarter than dogs. You can't get eight cats to pull a sled through snow. Do you ever watch cat rescue videos on YouTube? I could see why those things get millions of views. I let them run when I'm having dinner, and even one of my cats watches them with me. There's also the animals being bros subreddit, especially the cat videos that are in that subreddit. I'm mesmerized by those. You know, between all the time spent watching kitten and cat rescue videos and my two lovelies always trying to get me to pay attention to them and not the next CHP episode, it's a miracle I ever get anything done around here. And watching all these videos of people taking the time to save the life of a cat or any animal, it takes humanity to a new level and shows unequivocally that cat lovers, ilurophiles, we're united all over the world in these feelings we have for all felines, people of on every continent and every country, rich or poor, tall or short, humans in all colors, shapes, and sizes. For so many of us, what would we do without cats to enrich our lives? And this was a special CHP episode dedicated just to them. Well, with that, I'd like to thank my fellow excrement removal officer, Dr. Lee Moore of the Chinese Literature Podcast, for coming on the CHP. Again, all the poems and literature mentioned in this episode, as Lee said, will be posted to the Chinese Literature Podcast and will be freely available to all of you. And as far as where to find that, links to everything Lee's involved in and all his work, I'll have that posted on the show notes here. Any last-minute remarks, Dr. Moore?
I hope this podcast is as successful as a Taylor Swift video. And, you know, of course, she is probably the biggest allurophile in music today.
Really? I did not know that. Yep. Freddie Mercury was also an allurophile.
Huh.
Well, if it wasn't for that Miao Chun episode about his cat, Mr. Five White, we never would have done this. So I'm glad I checked that episode out. But then again, I never miss an episode of the Chinese Literature Podcast.
Laszlo, it's been fantastic coming back on the show. Thank you so much for having me.
We'll do it again one more time. So for Dr. Lee Moore and ourselves, this is Laszlo Montgomery wishing you and all 600 million house cats, farm cats, feral cats, and the elite 2% pedigree cats around the world all the very best. And I hope you'll join me again, same cat time, same cat channel, for another exciting episode of the China History Podcast.